Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's Tuesday, July 30th. This is The Rant. I'm Jeff. And on today's podcast, we're going to cover the New England Patriots and New Orleans Saints. I have some mailbag stuff, some voicemail stuff to get into as well. So a lot to get to today. Of course, it is fantasy football draft season. You already know, ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. But I also wanted to point out quickly, I do have another offer that is really cool. FJ Fantasy is where I get my draft boards from. And I've been using them for, I don't even know at this point, like 15 years. So if you're like me and you have a draft in a backyard and you want maybe a little bit of an upgraded experience, they're not that expensive. Not expensive at all. Extra like $5 a person. You get a really nice board with very good stickers. And if you use Ratcliffe as the promo code, so that is my last name, RATCLIFFE, 10% off there as well. FJFantasy.com is the website. Go check it out, man. I love them. I actually, again, this is not something that I'm just doing. I'm not a sellout. I mean, a little bit of a sellout, but I actually really like these draft boards, and I think you would too. So if you're in the market, go check it out. Okay, let's get into Drake May and the New England Patriots, because Drake May went third overall to the New England Patriots. It was a weird situation heading into the draft, because obviously the team needed a quarterback. Mac Jones was out. They brought in Jacoby Brissett, who is pretty much, you know, he's about as bridge quarterback as there is. And I don't think that's a knock on that dude, by the way. Jacoby Brissett's had a really decent career as a backup quarterback and occasional starter. But he's not somebody you build around, especially if burying the lead. You've moved on from arguably the greatest head coach in NFL history. And you knew you were going to move on from him because you already basically, you did, if you're the Patriots, you gave that job to Jerod Mayo in his contract. Like, he was the successor. It was already named. It was already done deal. It was just a matter of when Belichick would be out. So you're changing things up. And one of the biggest things that you need in the NFL to be successful, I would say, is the biggest thing, in fact, is a quarterback. So picking three overall, you know, that you'll always hear these teams say, well, we hope to never be up here again, which is true. Because if you're up there, you're coming off a bad season, or maybe you landed a really good pick in a trade. But for the most part, you're up there because you had a bad season. So they use it on a quarterback. And Drake May, admittedly, last year wasn't as good as the year before from a football standpoint, but this kid checks so many boxes. He is big, 6'4", 225. He's cerebral. He is a good kid on top of it, a yes, sir type of kid who's going to go out there. He's a sports junkie. He's going to do everything that's asked of him. He's from a sports family, obviously, you know, his father. And then even, you know, even his brother was like on the UNC basketball team. And, you know, he's just straight up sports family. Now, the question about him is whether or not he'll start from the jump. And of course, we get the classic line from the coaching staff here that Jacoby Brissett is in the lead and, you know, Drake May is going to have to compete to win the job. To some extent, I believe it. But by the same token, if you draft a quarterback third overall and it's not Trey Lance, we saw how well that worked out. Usually you want to get that guy on the field as fast as possible. Now, granted, they are rebuilding. Nobody expects anything out of them. In fact, if you look at sports books, you know, the Patriots are projected to be one of the worst, if not the worst team in the NFL. That doesn't mean that's their destiny, by the way, because Houston was projected to be bad last year, and that was not the case. Things can turn quickly in the NFL. But one would think that you got to get him out there early, get those reps, get him on the field. And so I don't think it's going to take long for him to get out there. I really don't. I don't think it's going to take long. And it could be week one. You know, it could be one of those classic scenarios where it's like, oh yeah, he just blew by him in training camp because he is a superior player. I mean, this guy gives me Justin Herbert vibes. Now, the difference between him and Justin Herbert, who also didn't start in week one of his rookie season, remember, that was Tyrod Taylor or Tyrod Taylor, or maybe he's both. He started that year. So it's not unprecedented here, but there's a big difference. Justin Herbert had Keenan Allen. He had Mike Williams. He had Austin Eckler. Drake May doesn't have that. Drake May doesn't have a clear number one receiver. In fact, it's fair to argue that he has a bunch of like number three receivers. He has Hunter Henry, a catch and fall down tight end. I don't mind Hunter Henry as a streamer, by the way. And then he has Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson out of the backfield. So it's not as good of a situation for fantasy. I don't mind taking a stab on Drake May as my third quarterback in Superflex, but that's as far as I'm going to go on him right now, especially because he's not guaranteed to start out of the gate. Let's dive into these wideouts, though. The team steps up. They draft Jalen Polk. Jalen Polk was decidedly the number two last year at Washington because Rome Odunze was the top guy. But that's not a knock on Jalen Polk because this dude is still very good at what he does. He has the versatility to move around the formation. You know, he can be an inside guy, an outside guy. Whatever you really need him to be, Jalen Polk can be that. I think given their personnel, they'll probably need him more on the outside than on the inside. You do have, you know, Demario Douglas there. You have Kendrick Bourne once he's coming off of the injury. And we don't know exactly when that's going to be. He could be PUP. So if right now you said, pick one of these guys, only one, because of course I only want one if I'm going to take any in a redraft. And there's a good chance that doesn't even happen. It's Polk, but it's not by a lot. He's a top-ranked guy for me out of this group, and I have him at wide receiver 65. So it's a dart. It could be Demario Douglas. It could end up being Kendrick Bourne. Heck, would it surprise me if it was KJ Osborne or even Javon Baker, the other rookie they drafted this year? No. I mean, I would be surprised if it was Juju or like Tyquan Thornton or Jalen Reagor, but any one of those guys wouldn't surprise me. I just don't think there's enough meat on the bone for any of them to be, you know, really a priority on draft day. If anything, if I'm going to address the passing game here, and I'm not a late round tight end drafter, but if you are, well, it would be Hunter Henry. And I think there's at least some red zone prowess. I know he's good in the red zone, but we just have to make sure he's getting those targets. Last year, he got 6 end zone targets, converted 5 of 6 for touchdowns. The only tight end with more end zone target touchdowns was Cole Kmet last year. So he is good in that area of the field. I think he can be pretty reliable for Drake May. I'm not going to do that cliche thing that everybody tends to do and say, oh, well, you know, rookie quarterbacks check down. No, they don't actually. It's really the opposite. They push vertically much more often. They often do so to a fault because, well, you're looking at NFL level coverage. You're looking at, you know, safeties who have range that you often don't see in the college level, you know, week in and week out, that is. So anyway, Hunter Henry, best ball wise, sure. I'm not going that route in redraft, but I can't really talk you out of it. I think the player who offers the most value here is Ramondre Stevenson. And yes, they did bring in Antonio Gibson. He is going to have a role out of the backfield as a pass catcher. I really doubt he's going to have much of a role as a runner. Last year in 16 games, he had 65 carries. He had 48 catches. He's been 40 plus, you know, each of the last 3 seasons. But from that high watermark of 258 carries in 2021, that's a huge drop off. You're talking almost 200 carries fewer in the same amount of games. I really don't think we're going to see much of him as a, you know, as a runner, and that's fine. Ramondre Stevenson, they paid him. He's there coming off of another productive season, though obviously Ezekiel Elliott took some of the work off his plate and he missed 5 games last year too. But 156 carries over that span, 38 catches. You know, he can do pretty much everything you want him to do from a 3-down standpoint. And the nice thing is he is getting out of that dead zone period of the draft. Like you'll see Ramondre Stevenson often in 12-team leagues, one quarterback in the 7th round. You will. He's RB20 for me. I have no hesitation taking him in that range if he gets out of the dead zone. I don't have to have him. If he's going in the 6th round, oh well. I don't have to have him. But if he gets out, then I like it. I would not be cuffing him, by the way. Antonio Gibson would not be a target. I'm not handcuffing a guy I'm drafting in the 7th round. Just not happening. All right, let's move over to New Orleans. Derek Carr is there. Sun's out, guns out, baby. Coming off of 3,878 passing yards. 25 passing scores. Not bad. Not bad at all. So what I liked about him, I really liked it in 2022. He was definitely taking a lot of shots there. But even last year, 8.2 air yards per throw, that's really solid. You know, he was 7th among quarterbacks in throws of 20-plus yards. He had 67 of them last year. He had at least 10, you know, he's one of 5 signal callers with at least 10 touchdowns on attempts of 20-plus air yards. So you're talking some big play. He had 6 games with 300 yards last year. And only one other quarterback had six that tied for the league lead. It was CJ Stroud. But unlike Stroud, Derek Carr did have six games where he failed to reach 200 passing yards. So from that vantage point, not somebody we're really looking at for fantasy purposes. More though, it's an example of we want the quarterback to be okay so that Chris Olave does well, you know, so that potentially Rashid Shaheed does well, so that whoever is playing tight end does well, and so that Alvin Kamara catches a bunch of passes as well. So I think there's enough there with Derek Carr. So let's get into these wideouts. I mean, Chris Olave is the dude. 87 catches last year, 1123, only five touchdowns. He's probably, he's one of these guys like where if, let's say he played 8 years in a league and he never had a double-digit touchdown season, I wouldn't really be that surprised. Just given his overall profile, he's not the biggest dude. He's 6 foot, 187. So he's not going to necessarily get those like jump ball targets, things like that. If he's scoring, it's probably a longer touchdown in more instances than not. He did have 10 end zone targets last year in 16 games. So that's not terrible. But he moves around the formation. You know, he was in the slot 40% of the time last year, 60% on the perimeter. He has a higher air yards per target rate than a lot of receivers. 13.3 last year, 14.2 the year before. There's a lot of upside with Olave. And I've heard people say, well, I'm not confident in Olave because I don't like Carr. Well, Olave did just fine with Carr last year. So what's different this year? If anything, this year might be a little bit more exciting because I think Clint Kubiak, you know, obviously it helps when your last name's Kubiak, but I think he's going to be pretty good for this team. Introducing the Shanahan Kubiak offense to this roster. And it is Shanahan Kubiak. Gary Kubiak deserves as much credit as Mike Shanahan for the evolution of this particular offensive scheme, which is like a West Coast scheme, but with zone blocking. You know, that is Gary Kubiak a lot as well. So I often give him credit where credit's due there. Obviously, the evolution of it has been Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, but Clint Kubiak's a part of that tree as well. So anyway, I have Olave at 11 among wide receivers. If you're looking, you know, ADP wise, right now Olave is going wide receiver 12. That's like late second. So right on line with him. You could potentially, if you're drafting early in the first round, say you go somebody like Tyreek Hill, you could get Olave potentially on the comeback, and that's not bad at all. It's not a bad start if he happens to be the highest guy on your board. Now, in terms of Rashid Shaheed, I'm definitely a little bit less optimistic about him consistently producing fantasy numbers. I'm at wide receiver 58, acknowledging he has some pop, he has some upside, no doubt about it, but it is much more of a boom or bust type profile because when you look at how the targets are going to be distributed here, it seems likely that, you know, Olave leads the way. Number two target, is it a tight end or is it Kamara? Because I doubt it's Shaheed, right? You have Kamara last year in 13 games had 86 targets. That's a lot. That's a lot. So he's going to be in the mix. And then, you know, with Michael Thomas out of the way, we should see more of A.T. Perry, not enough to make him fantasy relevant, but it all eats into what Shaheed can do. So just be aware, boom or bust option. Moving over to tight end, Juwan Johnson is hurt. He suffered a foot injury in the offseason, and he had surgery in June. Everything says he's going to be ready for the start of the season, but just be aware of that. And I think, like, overall, the perception of Juwan Johnson and the reality of Juwan Johnson are not the same thing. We tend to collectively view him as this high-ceiling guy, and yeah, he is. I mean, he showed it last year. What was that? Week 17. That was fantasy championship week when he had 90 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, and 90 yards and a touchdown on eight catches. No joke. But the floor is pretty low there, too. And part of the problem is you have Taysom Hill. Now, all word out of New Orleans is Hill is moving all over the place. He's playing some fullback. They have him on the perimeter. They have him in the slot. They have him lined up in line, running back, quarterback. Like, he's true Swiss Army knife Taysom Hill in this offense. My one hope is that it's sort of like a quasi-Debo role because Debo coming, you know, playing in a similar system is used in multiple ways. He's not Debo. Taysom Hill is not Debo, but he's not bad. He's still at 34 years old, by the way. Taysom Hill got old quick, didn't he? He's not bad. Is he going to be relevant in fantasy? I get the sense that it's going to be so boom or bust like usual that you know, if somebody drafts Taysom Hill, you can get him at the very end of a draft in one quarterback leagues. Somebody drafts this dude, they're going to drop him. You know how it goes. They'll drop him. And like Taysom Hill will be on the merry-go-round this year. I'd rather get a tight end earlier. And, you know, obviously Johnson and Hill would be in that streamer conversation, but it is really volatile. All right, so Alvin Kamara is pushing for a new deal. He is 29 years old. He contractually is in a bad spot, and I don't think he gets a new deal. I'll be honest. If they gave him any money, it might be to just appease him. Maybe they restructure or add some like bonus thresholds to his contract, but investing in a 29-year-old running back is not a good idea, especially when you're the New Orleans Saints who, oh boy, I pay a lot of attention to the salary cap. They are in an awful spot going forward. Like, they have no money. Like, this year, yeah, they're under the cap because they have to be. But if you look to next year, it's bad. Like, it's really bad. That right now, they're projected 91.6 over the cap. Now, the cap estimate is pretty conservative by over the cap. Even like if we moved it up $10 million, because they have it at 260, I highly doubt it's 260, unless this lawsuit really has that big of an impact. But let's say it's 270. They're still 81 over. Like, they're in such a bad spot from a salary cap standpoint. Like, the way you get out of that is not by paying a guy, like next year he'll be 30 years old at running back. That's not how you get out of it. So I would not be surprised if, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last year he's there. But I also would not be surprised if it's the last year that Jamal Williams is here, because he has no guaranteed money beyond this year. He's 29 years old as well. And his usage fell off a cliff last year. So point being, dynasty-wise, if you didn't jump off Kamara, it's probably too late. But redraft-wise, I don't mind him at all. At all this year. So I just mentioned Ramondre is at 20. I like Kamara a little bit more than that. Have him at 18. If he gets out of the dead zone period, if he gets into the seventh round, I'd be happy to take him. I expect him to be quite busy in the passing game like usual. He may not be a 300 carry guy, but he can get you 200 plus. You know, he can get you, you know, last year he had 180 in 13 games. And his style, like, he's slightly undersized. He's not small. You know, he's not Danelle Pumphrey out there, but he's slightly undersized. That's a body type stylistically that tends to do really well in a Shanahan Kubiak run scheme. So a lot of signs pointing to, you know, a nice year. Now, the one thing is the big plays are gone. Last year, did you realize this? Like, this is crazy. The longest run he had last year, 17 yards. Only six of 180 went for 15 plus. So that part of his game is gone. But if he's getting volume, if he has the catch ability as well, that's the catches are the ceiling. The volume in the run game is the floor. He's not bad for where he's being valued right now. Now, I'm getting a lot of questions about Kendre Miller. And yeah, his head coach said he needs to be more consistent, said he needs to stay healthy, all of that. Kendre Miller did not have a particularly good rookie season, but he could be somebody who emerges later in the year. Like, it would obviously take Jamal Williams and Alvin Kamara being hurt. But last year we did see him, Kendre Miller, that is, in the last game of the season have 73 rushing yards and a score on 13 carries. So there at least is something there. It's just like if you're in Dynasty, I'd hold on to him. Otherwise, I don't think there's much value here. I'm not handcuffing RB18 on my board either. So there you go. There's good running back value in both of those guys. I love Olave. That's about it. That's about it here with these two teams. Not much there. Tomorrow we'll head to New York. We'll do the Giants and the Jets. There's a lot more to like there, including a couple explosive wide receivers. One of the, you know, marquee running backs. Is there quarterback value here? Is there? With Aaron? Possibly. You know, we'll talk about that tomorrow. All right, let's get over to these emails. I still have a bunch in the hopper here. And, you know, by the way, nobody's done this yet, but I figure it'll eventually happen. Like, if I don't answer your email immediately, well, that's because right now I'm still answering emails from July 27th. You guys won't leave me alone on here, man. So just be patient. I'll get to them. Anyway, all right. This one is from Zach. It's titled Dynasty Superflex. He said he's been listening since he was 15. I don't know how many years that's been, but hopefully I had a good influence on the young teens of our fantasy football community. But he said He's had a couple IPAs. This looks like it was on, it was Friday into Saturday because Zach emailed me at 3:06 a.m. Hopefully you're on the West Coast, man. You up email? You up, Jeff? You up? He said, I'm familiar with your redraft Superflex strategy, but how do you approach it in the dynasty startup? So in a dynasty startup, what I do is I make a list of draftable quarterbacks. Fortunately, that list is relatively long right now, but basically any draftable quarterback, they have to be of the right age. So this year I was using 32 as my cutoff age for a dynasty startup. And I do have an article on this. Just Google 5 dynasty tips, Jeff Ratcliffe, and you'll find it. And it's a free article at ftnfantasy.com. But anyway, the list of draftable quarterbacks. So for example, Aaron Rodgers is not draftable. Matthew Stafford is not draftable. Russell Wilson is not draftable. But I make that list, and it has to be at least a viable list. Like, you could throw Spencer Rattler, who could be the number 3, I guess, in New Orleans, but he's not a viable potential option. Is Justin Fields? I think you have a much stronger case there. I still don't think he starts this year, but at least he's draftable. But what I'm doing is establishing that list. And let's say that list is 30 quarterbacks. Just using that number, it could be whatever number you come up with, because ultimately you have to come up with that number, whoever you deem draftable. And so whatever, let's say it's that number. I'm waiting until, 15 come off the board and then I'll address the position. Well, you might think that doesn't yield very good results, but I'm looking at my rankings right now and I see Brock Purdy in that range. I see Dak Prescott in that range. He barely makes the cut. He's 31 years old, but I have no issue. I have Tua Tagovailoa in that range. Jared Goff in that range. I don't love Jared Goff, but he's 29 years old, whatever. Deshaun Watson. I mean, there's plenty of guys down there. Like, you don't need Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes to win in a dynasty Superflex league. You just don't. You don't need them. You will be so much better off, so much more robust at wide receiver in particular if you take that approach. So it's all detailed, though, over at FTNFantasy.com. But you could Google search that 5 dynasty tips, Jeff Ratcliffe, and that's how you find it. Taylor checking in, and the title is Athletic Beers. I know where we're going here. He said, appreciate the recommendation on Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers. He said he picked up the regular and the hazy IPA. They're both great. Really like the hazy. He said he's excited to have his decision-making intact for the later rounds of this year's draft. And he said, thanks for the recommendation again. Yeah. So if you're wondering, if you're like just kind of coming into the fold now, I don't like to drink during fantasy football drafts. It's not that I don't like to drink, but I just don't like to drink then. And the reason is exactly what he said. I want my decision-making to be as sharp as I possibly can have it in the middle and late rounds. And that's usually when the IPAs start kicking in or whatever you're drinking. The rum and cokes, do people still drink those? Whatever it is, the old fashioned would probably be kicking in a little bit earlier. But still, I want to be as sharp as possible. Now, I'll crack a beer after the draft is done. But I still kind of like the feeling of, like I'm still having something that's kind of beerish. And these things don't taste like O'Doul's or anything like that. They're really good. In fact, if I gave somebody one of the Athletics, just put it in a glass and say I didn't say anything to them, I don't know if they'd be able to tell that it wasn't a real beer, that it was non-alcoholic. So yeah, it's a good little strategy. Keep my wits about me. Evan saying gold standard for clock enforcement. That is the title of the email. All right, let's see where this thing goes. He said, you recently had a listener ask about how to enforce the clock during snake drafts. He said his league, which is going into their 10th season this year, has a flawless clock enforcement method that folks might want to look into. When a manager's time is up, the next manager can make their pick whenever they're ready. We call that a Mike Tice. Short and sweet, but works perfectly. Rewards pre-draft prep. Keeps things moving nicely. When there's an infraction, there's no need to bring everything to a halt. It says puts all the burden on the dawdler and doesn't need anyone to play draft cop. Yeah, I appreciate that, Evan. I technically have that in one of my home leagues, but we don't really enforce it. It's just like if it ever gets like egregious, if somebody's just sitting there for 10 minutes, then it's like, yeah, all right, who's next? Go ahead. It does work. But the question is, how long is your clock? Because I also think like you got to give people a little bit of a leeway. Like I hate the draft taskmasters out there like OTC, 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 pick now, pick now, pick now. Like, we're here for fun. It's August. It's the end of the summer. Like, if you're in a live setting, maybe 5 minutes or something like that. But if you can't make a pick in 5 minutes, then yeah, you probably should be leapfrogged. Thanks, Evan. Appreciate you, man. Douglas said, question on mock drafts. So he's been listening the last 2 seasons. He's the back-to-back champion, thanks to me. I will take all the credit for that, Douglas. He said, how do you approach mock drafts for unconventional leagues when there are multiple keepers, unique lineups, IDP? Well, I'm not playing an IDP, I'll tell you that. He said he finds it difficult to gain value from them, particularly in the early rounds. Well, I'll tell you, I don't use mock drafts in general at all. And this is a good example of why that might be. But in general, when you do a mock draft, you're using a mock draft simulator, right? Or you're going to a site where you can quote unquote mock draft against somebody else, other people, other real humans. Well, a couple things. If you're mock drafting against a simulator, you are not learning how to draft against human beings. You're drafting against robots. You're drafting against ADP. You're not drafting against a real person. ADP has no emotion. ADP has no allegiance to a team, like fan bias. ADP is not hungover from last night because they got too excited and they drank too many IPAs. ADP is none of these things. It's not a real human being. And where I went wrong in the past, I used to do this all the time. I would sit there, I'd mock draft until I was blue in the face. I'd do so many stinking mock drafts, right? And by draft day, it would roll around and I thought I would know how the draft would go. And then it didn't go that way. Every time, every single draft I was in would never go the way I thought it was going to go. And you know, it's that like Mike Tyson phrase, and you know, I actually mentioned this on my SiriusXM show today, but I'll reuse that phrase. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And so I had a plan, and then I would start in these real actual live drafts, my home leagues, and I get punched in the mouth. And then I no longer had a plan and everything went sideways. The mock draft, not only did it not prepare me to draft against real humans, but it also kind of lulled me into this like, oh, well, this is just how drafts go. And I'm going to get this guy in this round and this guy in this round and this guy in this round. And none of it was ever true. And this is even more so when you have, unique roster settings, as he mentions, IDP, whatever. Good luck. God bless you. Godspeed to you. Or keepers, all that sort of stuff. Instead of mock drafting, my approach over the last several years has been know all the strategies you could potentially use, know when you can potentially use them, and be prepared to execute them to completion if you do use them. And then beyond that, know the player profiles and set your board accordingly. Like if you didn't know in the past, and a lot of people seemingly didn't, that Gabe Davis was going to be boom or bust, and you don't like that particular type of player, like you don't like inconsistent players, then if you drafted Gabe Davis and you didn't know that, you kind of had that coming to you, right? So know those players, set your board up accordingly, know the spots where you're going to go after certain players, certain ranges, and the strategies that you need to use in order to ultimately build the roster that is most effective for you. So much more important than mock drafts. Now, it's not that I'm saying don't practice drafting, because practice is important as well. Not a game, man. I'm talking about practice. Practice for me is not mock drafts. Practice for me is essentially going and doing a whole bunch of best balls. That's how I practice right now. So that is a good question, and I'm not a big mock draft fan. All right, let's do one more. Brant checking in, and he said, congrats on the pod. Yeah, I appreciate that, man. He said he's been a loyal listener since my PFF Sirius days. I wonder if you go all the way back to 2015. But either way, he said he's learned a ton. Appreciate that. And I'm glad to help you out, brother. He said his main league is a 12 teamer. He's got non PPR scoring. He said running backs go early often. He said, I found some trouble executing punt RB2 or zero RB after it's time to start hammering running backs. Often the choices are pretty picked over and he's faced with the choice to reach. So I don't know if we're defining reach the right way. I think I know what he's getting at, because my whole thing is don't reach, because reaching is overpaying. And then, you know, I'll do the whole bit where I say you don't go to Starbucks. And if they say it's $2.50 for the coffee, you go, no, I'm going to give you $3.50. Like, we don't do that. But yet on draft day, a lot of people do overpay. So he asks, am I willing to move running backs up my board in that range or take the value that people are giving and be weak at running back? Well, yeah, I mean, you said you've won a couple championships. Well, in those years, did you punt running back? And if you did, then I think the answer is very clear there. But no, I'm not moving running backs up my board in non-PPR. There's really not that much difference in the outcome in PPR, non-PPR, half point PPR. So I use the same board across all three formats. Now I do have a non-PPR draft board at ftnfantasy.com. It's the 1.0 format though. It's not 2.0 because there's, as far as the draft strategy is concerned, there's no reason to adjust the board for scoring in one quarterback leagues. It's the same board, same approach, straightforward. Now, if you're saying reach, well, what is reach? Let's define this term, because like technically speaking, reach is overpay. But let's say we're in a draft and we end up going zero RB, right? So you're loaded at wide out. You ended up getting a wheelhouse tight end. So like say you drafted, I don't know, like George Kittle in the sixth round, and then it was five wideouts to start that. I know you don't start five wideouts, but guess what? The fifth wideout, the guy who's on your bench, is going to be way better than your opponents, and then you're going to be able to make up ground at running back. So I'm not looking at wideouts in round seven. Even if like Chris Godwin is like one of the guys who I have a seventh round grade on. Let's say Chris Godwin is there. Guess what? I don't care. I'm not looking at him. And let's say the guys who I have a round seven grade on are no longer available at running back. So like, you know, Zach Moss, not there. So I look down the list a little bit. Highest ranked running back is still the choice for me. So even if I have a round eight grade on that player and I'm taking him in round seven, that's not a reach because he is the highest valued player on my board in that range. If I'm executing that strategy, it has to be the highest valued player at that position. That's not a reach. It is not a reach. So I want to be clear on that. Now, if you're saying that you don't like the guy who's top ranked, and instead you're going to go way down the board and you're going to get like Chase Brown, I have a ninth round grade on. Now, this could change obviously in the next couple of weeks, but as of right now, I have a ninth round grade, and you're drafting him ahead of somebody else. Well, then yeah, that's a reach. But that also may indicate that you just didn't set your board up correctly if you don't value him the same way that I do. So that all comes down to how you set your board up too. But I would not define that as a reach. As well. He said, essentially that's it. He said wide receivers are less valued. Your opponents may value them lower, but I would venture to say if we calculated the numbers, they wouldn't be less valued. And that actually will create more of an advantage for you than the other way around. So anyway, good stuff there from Brant. The rantpodjr@gmail.com is the email address. So you can check in there. I also set up a voicemail for you guys if you want to call in, if you're bold enough to call in. So we got a couple of these. Let me do the first one.
My name's Jeff.
Okay, then. was that a Borat impersonation or what was that? That almost reminded me of my my former boss over at PFF, the founder of PFF, Neil Hornsby. He's a Brit, and anytime he would like talk to me, he would be like, Jeff, and that's how you say my name. So usually when he talked to me, I was in trouble for some reason, but that was definitely not him. All right, let's do another voicemail.
Hey Jeff, it's Jason. I know I usually email you, but I got an awesome idea and I couldn't wait until I got home. You know, when I listen to the show at work, my colleagues assume I'm on a meeting and they just leave me alone, and I assume I'm not the only one who takes advantage of this. So do you mind taking like 15 seconds to discuss random work things? I mean, it could really be anything. They don't really care as long as it sounds like I'm doing work stuff.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I actually can tell a story about, I had a couple things. So I've worked a lot of crappy jobs in my life, and one of them was working at a particular clothing store in an outlet area in Lancaster County. And, let's see. The first letter of the store, it's something you would recognize, is the same as the first letter of my name. And the other part of the store's name is another thing that they might refer to rowing as, you know, like on the boat. All right. Anyway, yeah, you could figure it out. So it was not a good job. It was not my style. And I'd have to fold clothes and stuff like that. But there was one part of the store that you could kind of hide in, and they had, you know, those like circle mirrors in the corner so you can see if somebody's coming around the corner. You like just hide back there until you see a manager coming, and then you just act all flustered. That was a constant trick of mine at any job I used to have. I'd act all flustered, like something was going on. And then the managers would leave me alone. But that's all I really have for you. So yeah, appreciate you, Jason. All right, one more voicemail.
Hey, Jeff, Bill from Idaho. Maybe the first voicemail played from here. Longtime listener back in PFF. I want to start a dynasty league, and I would love to hear your thoughts. If you were starting one today, how would you love to put it together? 8, 10, 12 teams, Superflex, PPR, Fab, just a quick rundown of if you were starting one today. I've always wanted to play dynasty, and I think I got the boys together that can do it, and I would love your thoughts. Appreciate you. Welcome back to the rant. Can't wait to hear you. Bye.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really have an ideal type, but I can tell you some of the things that I'd be looking for if I was going to join a dynasty league. 12-team league feels about right. Superflex is, as far as I'm concerned, the right answer at this point. There's just too many viable quarterbacks to go one quarterback. Then two running back, three wide out, tight end, and a flex. So a superflex and a flex, right? And obviously you'd have the one required quarterback spot. I think Fab is the only way to go when it comes to waivers at this point as well. As far as bench spots are concerned, so my formula is always at least 1.5 bench spots for everyone's starting spot. So here we have the two quarterbacks, well, one in the super flex, the two running backs, the three wideouts, the tight end, and the flex. So that's 9 starting spots. So I'd want to be in the range of, let's call it like 14 to 20-ish, like 14 to 18 bench spots, something like that. At the very minimum, 14. Why? Because you want to reward people in Dynasty for getting out ahead of the curve, identifying talent, and then give them the ability to roster that talent. Your waiver wire should not be chock full in Dynasty. I would have an annual rookie draft, not including free agents. I would also have a couple different free agency runs in the offseason. So maybe you do one right around NFL free agency before you have a rookie draft. Then you have your rookie draft in May after the NFL draft. Then do another FAP run. Do one in June. Do one in July. Heck, do one in August. You know, you can do multiple FAP runs and then you can close them off. Obviously, trades year round. I think the one place I might close trades off would be as we're approaching playoffs. Like I'd actually have a regular season trade deadline and then trades wouldn't open back up until after the fantasy championship game. And the reason for that is just like you're going to have tanking no matter what, but the later you push the trade deadline, the more tanking you get in Dynasty, and then it just kind of makes it not fun. So I think those would be some of the key parts. Otherwise, I think that's kind of it. You know, keep it straightforward. If you ask me where I'm playing, I'm probably playing it on Sleeper, and yeah, that's it. So hopefully that answered your question there, Bill. From Idaho. And I don't care about PPR, non-half PPR. I usually go half PPR, but really scoring system doesn't matter to me. As long as it doesn't have like crazy bonuses and things like that, I think I'm good. All right. So if you want to call in on this voicemail line, you can 215-720-1708. Remember ftnfantasy.com, promo code Rat Pack for 10% off. More and more content going up each day from yours truly. So go check that out. And then I am on social media at Jeff Ratcliffe. That is on Twitter, also on Instagram. So I'm taking tomorrow off. I'll be back on Thursday. We'll do another show on Friday here. We're rolling through. We're almost done all these team previews. So, you know, we're working our way towards all the fun stuff, like strategy-wise and all that good stuff. But anyway, we'll continue on Thursday. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Otherwise, I'll catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out.